Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
So this is the first time since we began the podcast that we have been late. We didn't push a new episode live on Wednesday.
29 episodes in. That's a first.
And what happened is that we discovered that we had an audio problem with a podcast that we had recorded previously. And we discovered that when we were en route to Paris and we were in the Stockholm airport with both of our kids, a little bit jet lagged, and there was just nothing to be done. So.
And that first podcast was recorded on a 3-hour car ride from Los Angeles to Fresno.
And something in our audio process failed there. So we had a bunch of static and it just really wasn't going to be useful, usable, interesting audio to listen to. So here we are. We're a couple days late, but we are bringing you this episode of Zen Founder. And actually, in keeping with what's been going on in our lives, we thought we would spend today's episode talking about travel, particularly talking about how to travel with your kids and still like them. So as people who have listened to the podcast regularly know, we have two sons. They just had birthdays, so they are now ages 9 and 5. And this is our third annual international trip with them. We do a lot of weekend travel and lots of travel within the United States. But every year for the last 3 years, we have taken a month out of our lives and spent it in a different place. So the first trip was a combination of Prague and Italy, and that piggybacked on the first MicroConf Europe. And then last year we went to Thailand, and that was a piggyback off of Rob being able to attend the DC BKK conference, the Dynamite Circle. And this year we are spending our time in Paris, the south of France, and then heading to Spain in preparation for going to the third MicroConf Europe, which this year is in Barcelona.
And I have to be honest, I wouldn't do any of that if it weren't for your impetus. I do really enjoy the travel, but I wouldn't initiate it because of the amount of work that it requires, the amount of planning. And then I tend to not want to do things that have a lot of inconvenience in them. And if I were to travel alone, I'm fine with it. But once it requires us to plan and book places and bring two kids and worry about the 20 hours of travel time and all that, I kind of typically say, it's not worth it. So I'm actually glad that you push it forward and you say it is worth it. And you take care of the logistics of like booking the Airbnbs and getting us to and from the places. And I pitch in some way, I'm sure.
Yeah, you plan the conferences to get the airfare write-off and I will take care of the planning.
Right. So it's good. I mean, I think this is experience already. I can tell that our kids are going to remember for their lives, I'd imagine.
Yeah. And I think one thing I want to say is that it kind of sounds like, oh, you spend a month in Europe every year, like you're jet setters or you have this amazing lifestyle. And I want to debunk that a little bit in the sense that we do make good livings and we have made vocational choices that allow us a great deal of freedom. But this is also something that we really value and we plan around and we kind of work to make part of our lives, both saving financially, both setting up our work lives as much as possible so that we can do this, which especially for me as a clinical psychologist takes some very intentional kinds of choices.
Yeah, that's right. I've told a few colleagues / folks who I kind of know, and there's been different objections to why they can't do it. And one of them was like, well, we can never afford it. But like the dude owns a Tesla or something, you know? And I was like, that's cool if you want to own a Tesla. But if you saved that amount of money over the course of a year, you could take 4 people to Europe for a month. That's the kind of thing that we, like, I drive a beat up old Rendezvous that I paid cash for, like some old SUV. And these are the things we choose to value.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you have to, but it does mean that you probably, unless you're independently wealthy, which I don't imagine most folks are, you do have to make some sacrifices here and there and decide what's important to you and what's not. We've decided that this is important to us. And we sacrifice some other things in our lives in order to make it happen, including, like you said, like making the job choices. A different friend actually said, well, we can't do it because our kids are in public school and my wife has a job where she has clients and da 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 da. And when he got done, I said, you realize we have all of the same things you've just mentioned. Like we just have chosen to kind of say we're going to do it anyways. And we've talked to the public schools and we've dealt with the clients and we've dealt with the work situations. I mean, it does take some work. It doesn't happen magically. And it's something you have to be very intentional about. You're not just going to fall into doing it.
Right. Some of the practical workarounds are that, like for me, I do have a caseload of clients or patients that I take care of and see regularly. And when I get a new patient, I sort of talk with them about the fact that I do this. And if they want to work with me, then they have this sort of way in advance informed consent that I'm gone for a month every year. And then a couple of other weeks at different times during the year. I also work in a team, so I have people that can cover me. And that means I'm not a solo practitioner, which is good in lots of ways for me, but we won't go into that. The other thing is that we have made school choices for several reasons, but one of the perks of the charter school that our son attends is that they have been super supportive of this kind of trip. Our kids are actually missing the first 3 weeks of school year, which every time I email them, I like apologize about and I feel really bad. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, you know, the timing of this, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, we're so excited for you. This is so great. This is such a good learning experience. So that helps.
So I think we want to shape the conversation today into five categories. The first is why we choose to do this, like why we prioritize it. The second is the logistics, kind of how to do it and how to do it well and how to do it with kids. Because we've done it for 3 years now, and each year we've learned something and we started to pack differently and plan differently. The third is kind of the overall planning. The fourth is packing. And the fifth is kind of talking about a sample day and how we structure things.
Actually, 3, 4, and 5 are all subcategories of 2, but cool. My outlines are really difficult to follow, apparently.
We're in a hotel in Paris, and you wrote it like with charcoal.
So it's like, I couldn't find a pencil sharpener.
You etched it out with wax from a candle or something. Cool. So why do we travel?
One thing that comes to mind when we think about the travel conversation actually relates back to one of the really early podcasts that we did, which is How to Vacation Like a Founder. And in that episode, we outlined some of the things that we think are really important, both personally and professionally, to taking some time away and taking regular vacations. This kind of trip, this month-long international trip, is a little bit different than that in that it's not necessarily like us on the beach for a week. It's a lot more active. It's a lot more intentional. And it really is a learning trip, both for us and our kids. And so I think answer number one for me, why I travel is to learn, is because I want to have a full mind. I want to have lots of new experiences. I want to be kind of a cultured person, I guess, or just somebody who has been exposed to lots of different aspects of life.
And answer number one for me is that I want to be put out of my comfort zone, because one of my weaknesses is that I don't push myself out of my comfort zone enough. And traveling is one way that can do that. And it reminds me just how different a lot of the world is from what we are used to. And that starts reshaping my thinking, and it climbs into like ideas I get for parenting, ideas I get for work. Like it suddenly breaks free for me these old patterns, and just being on the road like this will result almost inevitably in like a new insight into something, like a pretty major insight. That's what I enjoy about it.
I think I also want to be someone, and I want to raise children who are kind of citizens of the world, that they have, they're comfortable with different languages and the fact that people live in lots of different ways. And they're informed about that, comfortable with it, able to interact with lots of different kinds of people, have a sense of humor about language, and just are able to be flexible in the kinds of relationships and interactions that they have. I'm sort of using the third person about my kids, but I'm speaking about myself too.
Yeah, and I think the other one that comes to mind is it really gels us together as a family unit when we do this. I find that we just have it deepens our relationships, because during the day, normally we're all off doing our own thing, 2 different jobs, 2 different schools, you know, everybody's doing their own thing. And this is a time when we are really able to gel together as a family. And I think deepen those roots and relationships that everyone will take with them, hopefully for the rest of our lives.
It's kind of our little tribe against the world. We could talk about this for a long time. Like, there's so many reasons to me to travel. But I think, again, I love that my kids are learning to appreciate things that are ancient. I love that they're learning to appreciate things that are beautiful. You know, when our, at the time, 3-year-old walked into the Vatican and into the Sistine Chapel and looked at the ceiling and said, wow, Like, he was genuinely impressed. And I just love that moment. He's learning to be in awe of things. And I think I don't want to raise cynical people. I don't want to raise people who are judgmental and comfortable and concerned about things that are different. I want to raise people who are open-minded and like willing to experience the magic of something and willing to be in awe of something. And there are lots of ways to accomplish that, I'm sure. But for us, consistently, travel has been a really powerful way.
And even though the kids were hot and kind of melting down, this is our first day in Paris today, so everybody's jet lagged with 9 hours time difference. And when I asked our five-year-old who painted the Mona Lisa, because we were going to go see it at the Louvre, he got so mad and like stomped his feet and said, Leonardo da Vinci. And he said that because he was insulted at the simplicity of the question.
Like,
you know that I know this. So why are you forcing me to ask? He was irritated. And that was a kind of a capstone moment for the day.
Don't demean me, Dad.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe let's talk a little bit about logistics. Maybe I'll talk for a minute about the overarching planning of the trip, since that's one of my jobs. There's a lot of things that we have learned that are different when we travel with our children than when we travel by ourselves. And a couple of those include really the paramount importance of lodging. So we do Airbnb almost exclusively on these trips. We really have found it to be super valuable to have an apartment or house somewhere. We have a kitchen, we can control our food, we can cook breakfast and lunches, and just have the flexibility of having a place to come back to that has some space where we don't all have to be in the same room, where we can relax and lay down and take rests and just let the kids play. So that has been really important to learn. The other piece of that is the importance of being really in the neighborhood that we want to spend time in. So especially since our youngest child is pretty young, like he's not going to walk 8 blocks to a metro station, then get on a train for 20 minutes, then get out and then walk another 20 minutes to a museum and then walk around for 2 hours. That's not feasible. He's not going to do that. So we need to be really close to things. And so we splurge on lodging that is convenient, ideally located, and big enough for us to have a little bit of room. Last year when we went to Thailand, we just didn't know the country and the situation well enough to really navigate the apartment scene. So we stayed in a lot of hotels, and that was hard in a lot of ways. We were just like always together. And I think we all got a little bit fatigued of that. Another logistics thing that I really think about when I plan the trip is we stay places longer. Rob and I went to Europe together like 16 years ago, and we did the Eurail Pass, and we went to like,
I think it was 10 cities in 30, 10 countries,
10 countries
in 30 days.
And multiple cities within that. We
it
just
awesome.
Were going.
Had a great time. Yeah.
And we did the highlights at least. Right. With our kids, we kind of like stay in a location for like a week. We have found, at least for them, for their personalities, they do much better when there's a little bit more predictability. There's less change. They kind of set up their little nest and sleeping arrangement, know where their clothes are in each place that we're staying. We also know that we just cannot do as much. Like today was our first day in Paris. We went to the Eiffel Tower and we went to the Louvre, which is still a full day. But if we were going by ourselves, we could have done a couple more museums and some more sites and things like that. We just have to go more slowly. So if there's a lot of things we want to do in a city, we need a week, and we can do just a couple activities each day. And then we spend a lot of time at parks or going to beaches and swimming pools and more downtime, which I will say is also really great travel experience time, because we watch our kids interact with other kids at playgrounds and those kinds of things.
And we're able to process it. And you and I are able to, we uploaded some photos to Facebook and we're able to talk to the kids about the travel.
So another logistics thing that's been really important to us is packing carefully. The first time we went to Europe, we each had like suitcases and backpacks, and we had way too much, and that made it difficult to manage.
And even that year, we pared down. Like, I remember we had a bunch and then we cut it down to less, but it wound up being us running for a boat in Venice with suitcases with wheels. I mean, that's kind of a fail in Venice. And so next year in Thailand, we pared it down a lot more. And then this year we basically did carry-on only. So we didn't check any luggage. And that includes our oldest son plays the cello. He plays a smaller cello that you can carry on and a violin. And then it was pretty much just one backpack per person beyond that. And so we went kind of the max size of a backpack that a grown-up can carry on a plane, right? And then the kids have their much smaller ones. So we carry a little more of their stuff. And it really is just a few days of clothes, 3-4 days changes of clothes.
Everyone has 5 shirts, 2 pairs of shorts, and a pair of pants.
Yep. And the rest is like, it's interesting how much electronic stuff you have to bring, because you have to bring the chargers, then you have to bring cables, then we each have a computer, you and I, because we have work to do, and MicroConf Europe to put on at the end.
Adapters.
Yep, adapters. And we have, over the course of the years, I have acquired 4 iPad minis. I didn't buy them all at once, but it's just you kind of aggregate them. And I sold off larger iPads purely because of this trip, because of the weight. And we essentially have now an iPad mini for each person. And with the first year, we brought like just a few books and some coloring, this and that. But now it's like 1 iPad mini, and that is your Kindle. So you have all your books. That is your audiobook with Audible. That is games if you want to play the entertainment, and it's movies if you want to download them on Amazon. So it's kind of all 4 things baked into this really small package.
So we get on the airplane, and we flew from Los Angeles to Stockholm was our first leg of our flight. And I sort of hand each kid their iPad and kind of say, like, see you in Sweden, guys.
They're used to it now. They look forward to that. So even though it's, you know, a 10 or 11 hour flight, they are excited about it. Whereas back in my day, you hated flights because they were long and boring, unless you had a good book. So it actually works out pretty well. I was really anxious about flying the first year with the kids. That has been probably the easiest part of the trip every year, because they wind up just getting tired at a certain point, putting on headphones and going to sleep. And they haven't had a problem doing that.
Yeah, audiobooks have been really big, both for falling asleep in new places and for the plane flight.
Because it makes you feel like you're at home to hear this familiar voice. They listen to books they've listened to over and over, like Ramona Quimby or The Business in Ramona, all that.
Beverly Cleary for the 5-year-old. He's obsessed.
Right. And even to be honest, last night, you know, I woke up at 3 a.m. because we're jet lagged like crazy. And I put in a headset and listened to podcasts. I mean, just crazy, like This Week in Tech, Windows Weekly, just stuff that's not that like engaging, but it's like I followed them for so long that like I hear this familiar voice and it helps kind of lull you to sleep. It feels familiar when you're in this unfamiliar place.
So to say maybe a quick word about minor packing decadence, if we were like in the DC, this might be considered decadent. But one thing that I have loved bringing on this trip is my ultra thin, ultra light Manduka yoga mat. And it folds up instead of rolling, it's like folds up really small. And it's just great to have. We like spread it out in the airport and one kid laid down on it. And it kind of helps me to discipline myself to practice yoga every day, because I brought my mat and I'm like, okay, I can't bring this for nothing. Same with the instruments. Obviously bringing a violin and a cello totally complicates what we bring, but it does allow our kids to keep up with their music practice. It provides a level of regularity to their day. We sort of start the day, we have breakfast, we play instruments, and then we go. So even though they whine about practicing sometimes, it does provide this like consistency and predictability to their life, which I think helps on the road. I also brought a roll of scotch tape for the 5-year-old, because he is obsessed with scotch tape and will occupy himself forever if he has tape.
And from that description, it sounds like we brought a bunch of stuff, but that's kind of it aside from clothes and toiletries.
Yeah.
There really isn't much else. I think I actually brought 2 small new card games that I had got off Kickstarter. And they're themed card games and stuff. So wanted to introduce them at a critical time where we're all bored and kind of just want some family time for the 4 of us to hang out together. I think to wrap up, we should talk about what it looks like to plan a sample day when you have a couple kids. And especially, I think early on, we're all jet lagged. And so you kind of plan around that, plan around the time difference. And then as time goes on, how we're able to get as much as we can out of the days without kind of ruining them, because if you push the kids too far, it just, everything implodes and it becomes fun for no one at that point. We've taken a number of different approaches, but the one that we found that works best for us is everyone tends to be on an early schedule anyway. So we get up early, we eat, and that's where it's nice to have control of our own food, because we can just pop up, have some cereal and yogurt in our own kitchen and then hop out. And even if it's like 6 a.m, we can get to a museum or to some type of site by the time it opens at 7 and we're like the first people there. We didn't do that this morning, obviously, but a lot of times we're able to do that. And then ideally we do it until about maybe 1 or 2, and then we all feel pretty tired and we could come back to the apartment and veg out a little bit. Either do
some homework.
Yeah, homework. We have music practice. We have some iPad to play. You know, we have games to play. And that's where we kind of take a deep breath and then head back out around, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5, and either see one side at sunset or grab dinner or do something fun.
An evening activity.
Yeah. Kind of split up the day, which is, again, different than what you and I would do if it was just us. We would just go the whole day and drink a couple cappuccinos and keep going.
And we have to be pretty sparse about days when we, like, do something that takes all day. Like, when we go to Spain, we're going to spend a day at the Alhambra, but we're not staying in Granada. We're staying in another city, so we're going to have to drive there. And, like, we know that's going to be, like, a 10-hour day. And there's just a handful of times when we're doing that on this trip because we really... Those really fatigue our kids, and then they get miserable, and then we get miserable, and
it's no good.
So we're careful with those. And then the day after that, it's like a day to be at the beach or at the pool, or time when the kids can have sort of unstructured time to do things that they want to do.
Maybe we can wrap up by talking about what it's like to work on the road, because I think this year I'm planning to do more work and basically stay more connected than I have been in the past couple years. I just have more going on. I have more stuff with Drip, and I guess it's really stuff with Drip, to be honest, and just having the team back home, I genuinely want to continue to be more involved in it. And so a couple years ago, it was pretty much unplug and check email and check-ins and notify some people here and there, but really not reply to too much email. And then last year, I intended to be a little more connected, but when you're in Thailand, the connectivity wasn't always great, and the time difference was a real drag.
Yeah.
So here it's definitely been already. I mean, we've only been here a couple of days, but I get the feeling that the rhythm is going to work, because if the 9 hours is pretty good, it's like right in the evening when we're getting here or hanging out, there's a little bit of room for me to talk stuff over with the folks back in Fresno who are just getting started for a day. And I mean, as long as the internet that can stick together and allow us to do video Skype if we need to, then it's totally feasible. And I mean, that's something that I think it makes this more of a feasible option to do once or even twice a year. If I took a vacation for 2 weeks a year, then you need to unplug. You need to get away from it. But if you take a lot of time off, you take a lot of weekends, and you take a month in the fall, and you take some time in the spring, and you take a week in the summer, it's like at a certain point you
actually have to get some work done at some point, right?
Yeah. I mean, you really do. So that's how I've been viewing it. And I feel like it's a pretty good balance of things. You don't just try to step away and let everybody handle it. And frankly, if everybody did, everybody could handle it, and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But to keep growth moving forward is a different story than just nothing imploding, right?
You don't want to only not suffer for having been away, but you'd like to keep some of the momentum and the great things that are happening with Drip. You'd like to keep those going.
Exactly. That's really the idea. I mean, we have very specific goals set up to meet each month, and I want to continue pushing for those. And so that means that I'm being involved and still replying to emails and still doing things. And I'm okay with that because I don't feel like I'm going to suffer for it. Right.
Yeah. And I think, again, as the spouse accompanying the founder, I think the big key for me about that is communication. And when you kind of go into the trip saying, this is kind of the rhythm that I'm going to keep about how often I am checking email, or, you know, from 2 to 4 each day, I'm going to work, and then a couple of other mornings, as long as there's, I think, clear expectations so that we can all just work around it, then it really goes smoothly. And I don't feel like it detracts from the trip at all. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up there. Again, this experience of traveling internationally or going on these extended trips has been something that has been really formational to our family. And these are the stories that we tell. These are the things that we laugh about. These are the pictures that we look at over and over are of these adventures. You know, if this is something that you're interested in, we hope that this podcast sort of helps it feel feasible. And we know, obviously, that not all of you have children or spouses or are thinking about doing this kind of trip with other people. But gosh, we could have like a whole other conversation about solo travel. But we'll have to do that at another time. So anyway, I hope this inspires you to get out there and go and see the world.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.